calibrate and self-regulate its own functionality over time. Neurofeedback trains your brain to self-regulate, much like a workout for the mind. This self-regulation helps your brain flex its own muscle using neuroplasticity. Self-regulation training strengthens and enhances the overall function of the central nervous system, thereby ramping up and improving mental performance, emotional control, and physiological stability. Question: what are your thoughts on other factors impacting the brain? Answer: the timeless pursuit of tranquility and inner peace has inspired a remarkably effective heuristic of, or examining of, wellness practices. Ancient holistic healing and rejuvenation techniques allow us to broaden the focus from simply treating specific maladies or conditions to embracing patients as whole beings so as to achieve optimal health. A voluminous amount of scientific research currently validates the untapped power and efficacy of holistic patient care. Mindfulness, meditation, yoga, acupuncture, hypnotherapy, therapeutic massage, and optimal brain healthy nutrition are integral to gaining a proper balance in life. Now that Dr. Sunder and Samantha have provided us with a general understanding of the mind, let's dive even deeper into the science. While the power of hypnosis has been evidenced in client testimonials and in the fact that the world's elite have been using this tool for centuries, science is now finally catching up. Brainwaves. I think it's safe to say we all know the brain is infinitely complex. To explain how the brain functions in any detail is quite the undertaking, but there are a few main areas that are helpful to understand before we continue on our hypnotic adventure. Furthermore, in my professional opinion, learning the science behind hypnosis allows the common misconceptions about it to finally be put to rest, and more important, the invaluable efficacy of hypnotherapy to be finally understood in a practical sense. Let's start with brainwaves. We've discussed brainwaves a lot already, especially the theta brainwave state that you enter into during hypnosis. But what is a brainwave exactly, and how is it measured? Put simply, brainwaves are synchronized electrical pulses between neurons that are communicating messages. Have you ever seen a movie where a patient has sensors placed on his or her scalp and there are wires from the sensors to machines? Those brainwaves are being measured in hertz, cycles per second. In general, brainwaves can range from slow and subtle to fast and complex. If your brainwaves measure slow, you may be feeling tired or sluggish. If they measure high, you may be feeling wired and alert. Brainwaves are a continued stream of consciousness that range in variation depending on what you're doing or feeling. There are 6 brainwave levels: infra-low, delta, theta, alpha, beta, and gamma. When it comes to hypnosis, theta brainwaves are the doorway to memory and learning. Vivid imagery, strong intuition, and information from your unconscious become available to you while your mind is in this state. It's the state we are all in as soon as we wake up in the morning and right before we fall asleep at night. Have you ever awakened and felt as if you were still in your dream and could remember it perfectly? Then, as you woke up even more, did the dream seem to slip away? This is the transition from a theta brainwave state up through alpha and into the waking state of beta. Hypnosis takes place anywhere from light alpha to deep delta. However, it's most associated with the theta brainwave range, which is a wonderfully deep meditative state that allows our mind to uncover stored memories. Our problem-solving abilities increase, as does our overall creativity. In the theta brainwave state, we tend to feel safe and relaxed, which also allows us to become highly suggestible to suggestions that are in line with our personal goals for transformation. In general, if your perception changes, then your brain waves change. Medication and recreational drugs alter brain waves. Meditation and yoga, along with neurofeedback, transcranial magnetic stimulation, and of course hypnotherapy, can train brain waves to be calm and peaceful. The more we practice these modalities, the more balanced the mind becomes. Neurons. Early on in my private practice, I began using visualizations with my clients. After Alexandre's initial success with this technique, I would have them imagine their brain like an aerial photo of a city at night, thinking of certain parts of the brain as having a blackout, meaning they were completely dark with no sign of life or electricity. They would describe the parts of their brain that were hustling and bustling with bright lights and tons of electricity, and they would describe what each area of the brain represented to them. Once they identified the area that was their issue, we would rework the system. If the anxiety part of the brain was extremely bright and overworking, and it looked like a system overload, we would turn off some of those lights until it calmed down. This freed up additional energy to work on another area. For example, if there was a lack of motivation, we would add electricity to the motivation part of the brain, turning on the lights there. This worked extremely well. When I spoke with Dr. Kirthi about the phenomenon, he said it's likely that the neurons were being mentally redirected in the brain. Neurons are equally as important to understand as brain waves, as both are cornerstones of how hypnosis functions in our mind. Our brain is basically a mass of interconnected neurons constantly communicating with one another. More specifically, cells within the nervous system called neurons communicate with each other in unique ways. The neuron is the basic working unit of the brain, a specialized cell designed to transmit information to other nerve cells, muscle, or gland cells. There are now conflicting reports on how many neurons are in the human brain. However, for some time, most neuroscientists have estimated that there are approximately 100 billion neurons in the brain. 100 billion! Neurons send and receive messages via an electrical impulse that can be measured as our brainwaves. The neurons and brainwaves work together to create memories, influence how we feel, and influence what we think about. To help explain how this works within the context of hypnotherapy, I'll use the analogy of a highway. Every time you think a thought, feel an emotion, or take an action, it is as if a little dirt path is being carved out in your mind, a neural pathway. Over time, through repetition, the dirt path becomes a little two-lane road. The more you repeat those thoughts, emotions, and actions, the faster that little road becomes paved. And over the years, that little dirt path can turn into a 16-lane highway in the brain with countless entry ramps. For example, if nail biting started off as a little dirt path and happened only because of one little trigger, let's say when you actually had a broken nail, but over the years you started biting your nails for countless reasons, boredom, stress, frustration, anger, and most insidious of all, habit, those become countless new entry ramps that have been built to this now 16-lane highway in the brain. Hypnotherapy allows us to put up orange traffic cones in front of that old highway, blocking access to it, but it only lasts if we quickly build another dirt path, a different option to cope with stress, frustration, and so on. Every hypnosis session strengthens and deepens that path so that before you know it, you have a new 16-lane highway in the brain, one that you created for yourself rather than one that was built by default. Neurofeedback and transcranial magnetic stimulation. When I first began working with Dr. Kirthi Sunder and Samantha Franklin, I was shocked to learn about two new breakthroughs in technology that are tremendously effective in combating depression and anxiety with little to no side effects. Neurofeedback and transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS. As soon as I learned about them, I felt the way I did when Alexandre broke through his paralysis, that everyone needs to know about it. Here is a brief primer on these fantastic new tools. Neurofeedback can be thought of as a brain exercise. It checks the condition of your mind's brainwaves and retrains them with its own feedback. It's a computer-assisted therapy whereby sensors are attached to the scalp and an analysis of your brain activity is conducted. A reflection of the brain's own activity is then reflected back, which recalibrates and self-regulates its function over time. It targets the bioelectrical functioning of the brain and attempts to improve psychological stability, mental performance, and emotional control over time. It helps with a variety of issues, such as drug and alcohol abuse, depression, attention deficits, and stress relief. It can even boost an individual's abilities when it comes to sports, arts, and business. TMS uses energy generated by pulsed magnetic fields to activate specific cortical neurons, as well as neural structures and pathways deep in the midbrain that control mood and depression. The treatment entails applying a device with a magnetic coil to the head over the left prefrontal cortex area. Throughout the treatment, the TMS system delivers enough stimulation in the predetermined area to get the designated neurons to activate and release the necessary chemical messengers that help to relieve the symptoms of depression. These activated neurons then stimulate deeper brain regions via known proximal pathways in an almost domino effect. This series of events happens upwards of 3,000 to 5,000 times per treatment session. Over the course of the average treatment, the brain practices these positive activation patterns so many times that it becomes able to do this on its own once treatment is completed. Both neurofeedback and TMS are non-invasive and non-pharmaceutical treatments, and they're thought of as cutting-edge treatments to relieve various mental issues. They can also be thought of as alternative therapies such as hypnotherapy. However, the science behind these modalities are factual, and the growing success is evident. The tortoise, the dolphin, and the hare. One of the most interesting things I learned while working with Dr. Sender and Samantha was that they never treat their patients for things like improving peak performance until such issues as depression and anxiety have been cleared up. I realized that without having made a conscious decision, my own sessions had always been structured the same way. Until trauma and pervasive negativity are healed, it's nearly impossible to see a breakthrough in something like attracting love into one's life. We have three primary sections of the brain. One is ancient, primitive, and keeps us alive. The second is in charge of our emotions, and the third is the most sophisticated and the most recent. They are the reptilian brain, the limbic brain, and the neocortex brain, respectively. Because I remember all things that have to do with animals, I refer to them in my mind as the tortoise, the dolphin, and the hare. Essentially, we have to first work on improving the ancient tortoise before we can work on the emotional dolphin, and finally we can catch up with the rapidly moving hare. These three parts of the brain have evolved over millions of years, and are known as today's brain, which, by the way, is still evolving. Consider this information found on the brain.mcgill.ca website. The reptilian brain, the oldest of the three, controls the body's vital functions, such as heart rate, breathing, body temperature, and balance. Our reptilian brain includes the main structures found in a reptile's brain, the brainstem and the cerebellum. The reptilian brain is reliable, but tends to be somewhat rigid and compulsive. The limbic brain emerged in the first mammals. It can record memories of behaviors that produced agreeable and disagreeable experiences, so it is responsible for what are called emotions in human beings. The main structures of the limbic brain are the hippocampus, the amygdala, and the hypothalamus. The limbic brain is the seat of the value judgments that we make, often unconsciously, that exert such a strong influence on our behavior. The neocortex first assumed importance in primates and culminated in the human brain, with its two large cerebral hemispheres that play such a dominant role. These hemispheres have been responsible for the development of human language, abstract thought, imagination, and consciousness. The neocortex is flexible and has almost infinite learning abilities. The neocortex is also what has enabled human cultures to develop. These three parts of the brain do not operate independently of one another. They have established numerous interconnections through which they influence one another. The neural pathways from the limbic system to the cortex, for example, are especially well developed. Here's an interesting exercise. Think of all the areas of your life that you would like to improve. Then put them into a category based on which brain they're associated with. You'll have a blueprint for exactly the areas you want to work on first, second, and third as you move from the most primitive part of the brain through the emotional brain and finally into the peak performance brain. If you'd like, you can refer to the PDF that came with this program as I read through two charts that we've provided for you. The reptilian brain, you work on these areas first, includes instincts, breathing, digestion, circulation, elimination, temperature, fight, flight, movement, and posture. The limbic brain, you work on these second, includes anger, sadness, disappointment, fear, and anxiety. And the neocortex, which you would work on last, make smarter decisions, more focus, less distraction, plan for future success, strengthen willpower, and learn a new language. Next, I will place a few very popular hypnotherapy topics within each one of these brain categories. For example, within the reptilian brain, we could work on stress relief, overcome anxiety, and overcome fear of flying. Within the limbic brain, we can also work on stress relief and overcome anxiety. Those two are shared with the reptilian, as well as overcome depression, increasing comfort or decreasing pain, stop nail biting, develop gratitude, increase self-love, overcome insomnia, and increase patience and kindness. Whereas within the neocortex, we could work on increasing self-worth, stopping negative thinking and complaints, breakthrough procrastination, weight loss and stop overeating, quit smoking, increase self-confidence, anger management, improve relationships, learn a new language, and increase motivation. What does the medical community have to say about hypnosis? Some of my all-time favorite studies about hypnosis include the following takeaways. A study by Alfred A. Barrios, Ph.D., conducted in Los Angeles in 1970 and first printed in Psychotherapy, Theory, Research, and Practice, compared recovery rates for various modalities of therapy and found the following. 600 sessions of psychoanalysis have an average recovery rate of 38%. 22 sessions of behavioral therapy have an average recovery rate of 72%. 6 sessions of hypnotherapy have an average recovery rate of 93%. 6 sessions resulting in 93% improvement. Can you believe this information has been known for over 46 years and still hypnosis has yet to be covered by insurance companies? The effect of psychosocial intervention on time of survival of 86 patients with metastatic breast cancer was studied prospectively. The one-year intervention consisted of weekly supportive group therapy with self-hypnosis for pain. Women with metastatic breast cancer who received group hypnosis therapy were able to reduce their pain experience by 50% compared to a control group. At a 10-year follow-up of these same women, the hypnosis treatment group had doubled their survival rate of the control group. Studies from Harvard Medical School show that hypnosis significantly reduces the time it takes to heal. 6 weeks after an ankle fracture, those in the hypnosis group showed the equivalent of 8.5 weeks of healing. Out of 1,000 irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, patients treated with 12 sessions of hypnotherapy, 76% of the patients improved from the treatment. Success rates were higher for females than males, 80% versus 62%, and slightly higher in patients with anxiety, 79% versus 71%. In addition to bowel symptom improvement, non-gastrointestinal systems also improved significantly on average after treatment, and hypnotherapy also improved the quality of life scores. Throughout this audiobook, we will discuss many ways in which hypnosis can be used to make us feel better. For example, to expedite the healing of bones, to treat IBS, or to calm nausea during chemotherapy treatments, as well as other ways in which it can expedite healing. For this chapter's self-hypnosis process, I have included a script that will help bring ease and comfort to any area of your body that is experiencing pain or discomfort. This is not meant to be used in lieu of anesthesia during a surgery, as that requires extensive conditioning and an on-site certified hypnotherapist. However, for general aches, pains, and headaches, this process will be a wonderful remedy. Self-hypnosis process. Increase comfort and decrease pain. You can find the written version of the script in the PDF that comes with your program. I suggest reading through the directions 2 or 3 times so that you will easily remember what to do once you close your eyes and get free. While listening to the audio version, you can just close your eyes, sit back, and relax as you follow along. However, please never listen to hypnosis while driving. If you're driving right now, please skip ahead to the next chapter and come back to follow along with this self-hypnosis process once you're in a safe place. Remember, video tutorials and audio recordings are available to you at www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com that will help you become a self-hypnosis pro in no time at all. Begin by making note of your starting stress level. 10 equals a full-blown panic attack, and 0 equals 0 stress. No stress at all. The most relaxed a person can possibly be. Remember this number. Sit in a comfortable chair and place your feet on the ground, resting your hands gently in your lap. With your spine straight but comfortable and your eyes closed, take 4 deep, slow breaths, inhaling through your nose for 4 counts and exhaling through your nose for 8 counts. Let's begin. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. With your eyes still closed, imagine gentle roots growing from the bottom of your feet down into the center of the earth, grounding you. Good. Imagine a color you love flowing in through the top of your head, flowing all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots, down into the center of the earth. Bring all of your focus and awareness and attention to the palms of your hands. Perhaps you can feel your palms tingling. Perhaps you can feel your heartbeat in your hands. Perhaps you notice a sensation of expansion in your hands. Just notice and breathe for a few moments now while I'm silent. Good. Now repeating silently in your mind or out loud after me. 10. I am going deeper and deeper. 9. I am going deeper and deeper. 8. I am going deeper and deeper. 7. I am going deeper and deeper. 6. I am going deeper and deeper. 5. I am going deeper and deeper. 4. I am going deeper and deeper. 3. I am going deeper and deeper. 2. I am going deeper and deeper. 1. I am going deeper and deeper. In this next step for one of the hypnoaffirmations, you're going to fill in the blank. So for example, I will say, I send my blank body part love and relaxation. And you will fill in the blank with that body part that is experiencing pain or achiness that you want to feel better. So for example, you will think in your mind or say out loud, I send my knee love and relaxation. And that's just an example. All right, let's begin. With your eyes still closed, repeat the following affirmations silently in your mind or out loud after me.
I send my body part love and relaxation. I feel myself improving. I am safe. I send my body part love and relaxation. I feel myself improving. I am safe. I send my body part love and relaxation. I feel myself improving. I am safe. Take another nice, deep, letting go breath and imagine all of the pain draining away from that part of the body. Pretend now that loving, calm, healing energy is now soothing that part of your body. See, feel, and experience comfortable relief all over for the next few moments while I am silent. Good. Now that you've spent a few moments imagining that part of your body healing and becoming comfortable, imagine the same color as before flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots into the center of the earth. Put a gentle smile on your lips now, open your eyes, stretch your arms over the top of your head, and say yes. Notice your new number on the scale. Remember, 0 equals 0 stress, the most relaxed you can be, and congratulate yourself on how quickly you improved your state. Here is a simple summary of the process. Notice starting stress level from 0 to 10. Take 4 deep, slow breaths. Grow roots. Color. Notice your palms. Count down from 10 to 1 saying, I'm going deeper and deeper after each number. Repeat the hypno-affirmations. I send my fill-in-the-blank body part, love and relaxation. I feel myself improving. I am safe. 3 times each. Imagine healing that part of your body. Color. Smile while opening your eyes and say yes. Notice new number on the scale from 0 to 10 and congratulate yourself for improving your state so quickly. In this slightly more advanced self-hypnosis script, we've added one new component, a color we love that is flowing through our body. Why do we imagine a color we love flowing in through the top of our head, all the way through our body? Oftentimes, when we love a color, it is prominently featured throughout our wardrobe, on the walls of our home, in trinkets throughout our office, even in the jewelry and artwork that we buy. By continually running the color we love through our body, it not only calms us, it also conditions us to subconsciously feel calm every time we see that color throughout our day. You can change the color every time you practice the self-hypnosis process, or you can use the same color each time. Any color or shade will work, and I tend to find that blue is the most widely used. Next steps. Excellent. You have completed the increase comfort, decrease pain self-hypnosis process. Now go ahead and visit www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com to access this chapter's longer hypnosis recording. Sit back, relax, and close your eyes, get free. After you listen to the recording, please let me know how it went. Use the hashtag closeyoureyesgetfree on Instagram or Twitter. Message me at GraceSmithTV your starting and ending numbers on the stress scale. I'd also love to know which body part you are healing and how much comfort you were able to achieve. By using the hashtag, you'll get to see how other people are improving right alongside you, plus I'll have an opportunity to cheer you on. Move on to chapter 5, and in the meantime, look out for all of the wonderful benefits you're already starting to receive as a result of learning the power of hypnosis. Chapter 5. The first step to mental freedom. Taking responsibility for your actions. Melody was a talker.
Whenever she was asked about her day, she would go on for ages, describing every little detail, every thought, every person she interacted with, and every possible outcome of every scenario. She meant well, and her friends loved her spontaneous and bubbly personality, but to get a word in edgewise during a conversation, they'd have to time it when Melody took a breath. At her first hypnotherapy session, her answer to, "What brings you here today?" was a perfect reflection of the frenzy going on inside her mind. "Well, my friend used hypnosis to quit smoking, so I figured I'd give it a shot because I've been in therapy for 10 years. And I feel like it helped me in some ways, and in other ways, I'm just getting worse. Like, I'm 10 pounds heavier than I was last year. I've been single for longer than most of my friends, and I really thought I'd be further along in my career than I am now. I mean, honestly, I think I thought I'd have my boss's boss's job by now. I have some really great friends, but they're starting to get married and have babies, and even though I totally don't want or need those things right now, I definitely want them within the next 3 to 5 years. So I guess I'm starting to panic a little because that basically means I need to meet Mr. or Ms. Right, like right now. I just keep going on Tinder dates, and I'm always so excited about them beforehand, and afterward, I'm so depressed about the state of dating in New York City, I just eat for a bunch of hours while watching TV. There's one guy I've been out with a few times, but I'm really not sure what I'm still doing with him. Then again, the other night, he did cook me dinner, and he remembered I love quinoa with almonds and, you know, cayenne pepper. I mean, I think that's pretty specific. So if he remembered that, he must have been thinking about me. I think I always assume every guy is going to turn out like the last one, so I never give them a chance. But then I do give them a chance, and they end up being exactly like the last one. So I guess I shouldn't give anybody a chance. I don't know. I don't understand why this keeps happening. But if I had to guess, I would say it has something to do with my boss, because I swear she just doesn't understand my potential. She doesn't understand all of the things I could bring to the company, so she never asks for help." At this point, the hypnotherapist gently cleared her throat. In a kind way, she said, "Melody, thank you so much. I'm sure there's so much more you could tell me, but in the interest of time, so that you can get the most out of your session, I do want to point out that hypnotherapy is quite different from regular talk therapy. We actually don't give much weight to what the conscious mind has to say or even what it thinks. This is because the conscious mind is simply a record player stuck on the same song. Your conscious words and thoughts are revealing your subconscious programming, a story that was told and retold until it became your belief system about the world you live in and your role in it. If we want to change the things we say or do or feel, we have to start seeing those undesirable thoughts, feelings, and actions as nothing more than a story. That's it, a story. If you want to change your life, you have to change the story. And if you keep telling the same story, it's like pedaling backward up a hill, totally futile, because you strengthen the story every time you repeat it. So, go ahead and close your eyes, take a deep breath, and let me know in a word or two if this makes sense." "Yes. It makes so much sense," Melody responded. She continued at a slower pace than before. "So, every time I complained to my therapist or girlfriends about the jerk I went out with last night, instead of it relieving stress like I thought it was just making it worse?" The hypnotherapist smiled and said, "It was strengthening the patterns of whatever was being repeated. So it sounds like it was repeating the patterns of complaining, feeling stress, feeling let down, and the expectation that all men are the same. Our expectations tend to be self-fulfilling prophecies because we make decisions that are in alignment with our worldview." Melody took a deep breath and looked up at the ceiling for a few moments before saying, "So by complaining about men and my boss, I've been attracting bad relationships. It's why I keep getting passed over for a raise?" "Maybe, maybe not. But imagine if you expected every guy you met to be genuinely kind, perhaps not perfect for you, but kind. Could that potentially change the types of people you swipe right for on Tinder? If you assumed your boss knew all of your best qualities and that she wanted what is best for you, do you think you would perform better or worse at work? Do you think it might change how you interact with her and that it might improve her view of you and your abilities? Oh my God. Do you know how many brunches and bottomless mimosas and hours of bitching to my girlfriends I've had in my life? I think I may have been strengthening all of the wrong things pretty much forever. As Melody's eyes began to well up with tears, the hypnotherapist said, "What a wonderful thing that you've learned this now and will know the deep peace that comes from writing your own story instead of perpetuating the one that was written for you by your parents, society, and advertising companies." Melody laughed and said, "Wow, if they wrote my story, no wonder I'm such a mess." The hypnotherapist laughed. "You know, I wrote a book about this, and the title was almost Brainwash Yourself or Everyone Else Will, because it's really quite true. If we don't take the reins of our own subconscious programming, everyone else will, without our being aware of it." Now you're going to see in just a moment that the difference between communication on the conscious level and communication on the subconscious level is fascinating. Once you enter into hypnosis, you'll become aware of a resource state where problem solving is easy and where you can reach the core of an issue very, very quickly. So let's choose one area of your life where if you were to transform that, everything else would improve. What comes to mind first? Melody thought about it for a moment before speaking, which was already a sign that a shift was taking place. Then she said, "I honestly think if I didn't hate my job, where I spend most of my life, that I wouldn't put so much pressure on the dates to make me happy. And I wouldn't feel so ashamed about my friends moving on with their lives, with raises or promotions or weddings or babies. And I think I'd eat less if I felt proud of my work. So let's start with career." Fabulous. It's really helpful if you simply tell me in one sentence how you currently feel about your career. Then tell me in one sentence how you want to feel or what habit you want to have instead. "I feel ashamed and embarrassed. I want to feel motivated and proud." Great. Let's begin. Close your eyes. They both smiled as Melody closed her eyes and took a nice, deep, letting go breath. The truth and the lies. In Melody's story, the hypnotherapist's role was to help her shift from focusing on what I would call lies to focusing on the truth. The truth is singular. You are perfect. Other ways to say it include you are worthy, you are loved. This isn't based in any religion, although many religions were initially based on the truth. Although we have discussed reprogramming, transforming, and improving, none of this is really true. These terms make what we're doing easy to understand and comprehend, especially in the self-improvement or bust kind of world that we live in, but it doesn't make it true. The truth is that you are already perfect. Something that's perfect can't be improved upon or fixed because there's nothing broken. The fact is that you're not actually hypnotizing yourself. You are de-hypnotizing yourself. A lot of spiritual teachers talk about the stories we tell ourselves. I do agree that they are stories. However, to me, stories are what I heard at bedtime. They were innocuous. What we tell ourselves are lies. These lies are insidious, and the world suffers terribly because of them. It's a lie that we're separate from one another. It's a lie that one's life is worth more than another. And it's a lie that we're too fat, thin, rich, or poor. You are perfect. You are perfect. You are perfect. Say it with me. I am perfect. I am perfect. I am perfect. Take a nice, deep, letting go breath and repeat it again. I am perfect. I am perfect. I am perfect. You very well may be thinking, "Seriously, Grace? After learning that my brain is firing in ways that don't serve me, you're now telling me I'm perfect?" Yes. Everyone who has ever looked into the eyes of a baby knows that when we first show up on this planet, we are 100% perfect. And that essence is not erased over time. It is simply buried. Through the process of dehypnosis, we are going to peel away all of those layers upon layers of conditioning and get back to the source. Get back to who you truly are, perfect, whole, and complete. This is why I love what I've learned from the Mind and Body Research Institute, which we discussed at length in Chapter 4. You are perfect. Through all of these years of conditioning, your brain has simply developed dark spots in certain areas, and we're going to flip the light switch back on. You are perfect. Your brain is hardwired to believe a whole bunch of lies. You're not to blame for them, but you're responsible for getting rid of them. So you're going to scrub and wash away the layers of muck until all that's left is the core, the truth, which is that you are perfect. Your purpose. A lot of my clients come to me worried about their life's purpose. As far as interests go, it's a good one to have. Hypnotherapy can help you dig out the answer much faster once you've gotten underneath the noise of the story your conscious mind has been playing on repeat. Imagine that you're in a jam-packed, noisy motorboat, choking on exhaust fumes as you move around searching for your life's purpose. The boat is packed full with people telling you their opinion about what you should do, who you should be, what's important, what will work, what won't work, and how to spend your money, and so on. That's your conscious mind trying to figure out your life's purpose. Now, take a nice deep breath and dive into the cool, clean, calm waters. Dive deep down. You realize that the deeper you dive, the less noise you hear. The voices are fading. You no longer hear the noisy engine and the exhaust fumes are gone. You dive down and ask the pure, clean quietness, "What is my purpose?" And all of a sudden, a massive, gorgeous clamshell opens and your life's purpose is inscribed inside. That's your subconscious mind figuring out your life's purpose. It's likely you'll realize you already knew your life's purpose and were headed down the right trail years ago, but you allowed the voices on the boat to throw you off the scent. You get the answer from going inward, deeper. You close your eyes and get free. Remember that you get better at hypnosis over time. If you want a free dive down to get those answers, you have to learn how to train your muscles first. If the answer isn't clear just yet, keep at it. In the meantime, what if we just assume that your job, your life's purpose, is to be kind to everyone you meet and do what brings you joy? What if that was it? Your life's purpose. Be kind to everyone you meet and do what brings you joy. You'd have to be nice to the poor soul who answers the phone when you call to challenge the overdraft fee you got when your Netflix charge threw your finances into a tizzy. You'd have to be nice to the scowling people on the subway. You'd have to be nice to your mom even when she disagrees with you or tells you to clean something. Can you imagine what would happen if you were nice during all of these situations? Other people might be nice back more often than not. Then because of that, the next generation is raised to be that way. Eventually, if we were kind to everyone and did what brought us joy, we wouldn't need hypnosis. I realize that until we do a lot of work on our subconscious, this can be easier said than done. However, if you're concerned about your life's purpose, I welcome you to release that tight grasp on the question, "What is my purpose?" Simply allow kindness and a pursuit of what brings you long-term joy to lead the way and allow the more refined answer to the question to reveal itself over time. Deconstruction of the habits you no longer want. Habits are built in this order: subconscious programming, conscious thoughts, conscious actions. Unfortunately, our level of awareness is in the exact opposite order. We are most aware of the actions we take first. We know we ate the bag of chips because the bag is there, deflated and empty, and our fingers are covered in salt, oil, and crumbs. There's evidence. We're aware of some of the thoughts we think because we hear some of it. But there's a lot of chatter going on endlessly in the background as we're constantly thinking, thinking, thinking. There is less concrete evidence, so we're less aware of the thoughts we think than we are of the actions we take. we have the least awareness of our subconscious programming. Most self-help books stop at the level of the actions we take, but that isn't enough to make lasting changes, not by a long shot. However, it's the best place to start because we're most aware of our actions. The way we're going to deconstruct your habits, to dehypnotize you, is by moving from the greatest level of awareness to the least level of awareness. This is how you'll be able to stay the most engaged. By tracking your success, you'll remain motivated to continue. The first action you notice has improved, the more excited you will become to take the trash out of your mind. We're going to start with what you can see simply because social proof is a powerful mechanism to keep going, but we're very quickly going to get to the root issue. Reading self-help books and not improving can actually harm us. It can strengthen our sense of failure and weaken our resolve. Knowing more and more about our problems but never learning how to change the root of the issue is not self-help. It's a setup for disappointment. Do you know someone who read The Secret, but instead of manifesting their dreams, became even more anxious? Suddenly they're hyper-aware of their negative thoughts, but they have no tools for diminishing them. If bad habits are weeds, then knowledge is like throwing seeds on top of weeds. With hypnosis, we remove the weeds first and then plant the seeds in the newly cleaned up fertile ground of the subconscious mind. Actions. Remember that we discussed how your habits were primarily formed through the three E's, environment, elders, and entertainment? In this chapter, we begin to get our hands dirty with unraveling this conditioning. If you're anything like me or the thousands of clients I've worked with, there's at least one habit in your life that drives you crazy. Maybe you've read two or three books on the subject, attended workshops, or worked with coaches or a psychiatrist to overcome the habit. Yet, it still exists in your life. Maybe it's negative thinking, overeating, smoking, or a fear of flying. Whatever it is, I suspect there's something in your life that you're desperate to overcome. Maybe you've already reached a level of excellence and peak performance, but you've seemed to plateau. There's a pattern there, a habit that's keeping you from excelling to that next level. This process will help you with that too. So when you wake up in the morning, if you're not thinking to yourself, I'm free. Every day I'm creating the life of my dreams. It's so good to be awake. Then something could be better. Life is way too short to wake up feeling dread and regret, as if you haven't accomplished your goals and that time is going by too quickly. I thought I'd be so much further than I am by this age, is something I hear often from new clients. Do you remember my invitation to you in Chapter 1? I shared with you that, in fact, you do have the ability to wake up and feel proud of yourself, to feel excited about the day ahead, to wake up and not be consumed by anxiety, but to feel joy and excitement. To achieve this, we need a breakthrough, and the first step to this mental freedom is going to be that breakthrough. But you have to actually follow the steps. It's actually simple. All you need is focus and commitment. So make a commitment to listen to the rest of this audiobook and you'll continue to experience a profound shift. I used the following four steps to mental freedom to overcome habits that were keeping me from living my best life. I've also taught these four steps to all of my individual clients and they had the same profound lasting results. That's what I want for you. The first step is taking responsibility for your actions. In the following chapters, we'll cover the remaining three steps, which are 2, taking responsibility for your thoughts, 3, reprogramming, transforming your subconscious, and 4, giving back to others. When we take responsibility for our actions, we claim a stake in power. When we blame others, we give our power away. If you say, I had a terrible day because my colleague did this or that, you're giving away your power to your colleague. You have put that person on a pedestal, making him or her a major player in your life. Why? Because you've given this individual the power to dictate how you feel. When you put yourself in the position of the victim, there's a subconscious belief that one of two things is happening. What the subconscious believes it is gaining by blaming others is you're going to receive sympathy and or you're going to be excused for bad behavior. Maybe people will feel bad for you because so many terrible things are happening in your life, or it will excuse drinking more than you should, eating more than you should, or not getting work done. The truth is that receiving sympathy from others and hoping to have your bad behavior excused does not help you in any way. It only harms you because it robs you of your own power. The only harm that's done is to you. In essence, by playing the victim, you victimize yourself. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean it's your fault. It doesn't mean you're meant to accept blame for everything that happens in your life. But allowing others to affect the way you feel is your responsibility. Feel the difference in the energy between these two statements. They did this to me. And this happened, and this is what I'm doing about it. Consider those statements again. Which one will allow you to move forward? Which will make it easier for you to live an incredible life of your own design? Which one will allow you to get free? Now let's go a little deeper. I've had a lot of people in my lectures and workshops ask me, how can I take responsibility for my parents' divorce? How can I take responsibility for things like war and famine and terrible things that happen every day? These are important questions. To get the answer, let's compare the three following phrases, feeling the energy behind each. One, I didn't have anything to do with that. Two, it's not my fault that. Three, it's my responsibility to. Listen to each of these responses and feel the energy behind them. One, I didn't have anything to do with creating this war. It's not my problem. Two, there's a war and it's not my fault that it exists. Three, there's a war and it's my responsibility to make a positive difference in whatever way I can. Which of these phrases inspires action? Which one inspires excellence, living life as an example of ideals and principles? And which ones inspire lethargy, procrastination, doing less than you're capable of, or even feelings of fear? Even if you truly believe something isn't your fault or your problem, when you feel the energy behind these phrases of shoving off responsibility and blame onto others, it's a feeling of stagnation, isn't it? It happened to you. You're completely out of control. So while you may be attempting to distance yourself from the situation, you're telling your subconscious and the world that you have zero power. You're claiming to be powerless. Now, let's make this a little more practical and feel the energy behind these three phrases. One, my boss is a insert appropriate expletive. Two, it isn't my fault that the systems at work are so convoluted, archaic, and horrible that I can't do my job. Three, it's my job, it's my responsibility. Only one of these phrases brings power back to you, and it's the one in which you take responsibility. How does this example carry over into the rest of your life? If you place the blame on your boss, colleagues, or the system, complaining that the meetings are too long or the clients are terrible, you're giving your power away 40 hours or more every week. Then the complaining continues about your personal life. Your house is too small, your feet hurt because of your shoes, your back hurts because of the jeans you got from your grandmother, and so on. Essentially, you're spending your life giving your power away. We tend to believe we can blame everything on everyone else, but that we should still be able to find the strength within us on January 1st to begin going to the gym every day. But the truth is, you can't have both. You can't give away your power all year long and then expect to have the power it takes to form a healthy new habit overnight with sheer force of will. We weaken our resolve with every powerless thought, and then we weaken it again when we can't follow through with our goals and resolutions. What if you want to overcome a challenging habit or develop excellence somewhere in your life? You need power to be able to change, but your existing habit is to give your power away. The habit is to assume that everyone else has more power than you do. So the choice is to cultivate a habit where you're powerful and in control of your life or a habit where everyone else has the power and control. Maybe your boss really is a jerk, and maybe your systems at work really are terrible. But you have a choice to give away your power or to become more powerful by taking responsibility for what happens in your life. It's entirely up to you. In just a moment, I'm going to ask that you close your eyes, take a nice, deep, letting go breath, and imagine a perfect world, a perfect utopia, the most amazing place you can possibly imagine. You're going to imagine this for 60 seconds. Then you'll open your eyes and continue listening. Ready? You can pause the recording for 60 seconds now. Welcome back. How do you feel after those 60 seconds? When I do this in my courses and lectures or with my individual clients, I find that almost everyone's perfect world looks nearly the same. It's fascinating. It's a place where everyone is healthy, the planet is healthy, people are nice to one another, and everyone is prosperous. Ask yourself, to create such a world, what actions would everyone in that world have to take on a daily basis, moment by moment, to make it happen? Then, more important, you have to ask yourself, what am I creating? Are your actions in alignment with what's necessary to create that perfect world where you desire to live? When we're rude to a bank teller or a telemarketer, when we complain about how we don't have enough money and so on, what kind of world are we creating? Are our actions manifesting the opposite of the world that we desire to live in, or are our actions manifesting a utopia? Furthermore, do we expect that other people should act in accordance with what's required to create this utopia, but that we're somehow separate from this responsibility? Are we creating conflict or peace? Wealth or lack. And this means 100% of the time, taking responsibility for all the good as well as all the quote-unquote bad in our lives. I put bad in quotes because there really is no such thing as bad. There are only misunderstood lessons that are yet to be fully absorbed. Taking responsibility for our actions is just the first step, and when we do, we gain the power necessary to drive us through the remaining three steps to mental freedom. As a result of taking responsibility, something wonderful happens. Procrastination ceases to be a viable option. Blaming others and hoping they'll fix the world's messes also goes away. Because we're taking responsibility, there's no one to blame. And with no one to blame, there's so much less to complain about. Instead, we have room to think about how grateful we are for our incredible life. You might be thinking, this all sounds great, Grace, but I've been blaming for so long that my mind is riddled with negative thoughts. How do I go about changing this? Yes, reality check. This stuff can be challenging. You're unpacking patterns that have been around for years, perhaps for a lifetime. Plus, your subconscious is currently 100% comfy with these patterns and isn't totally stoked on the idea of change right out the gate. At about this point in the process, a lot of my clients will say, Grace, this is hard. So if you're feeling that way, you're in good company. But the truth is, it isn't hard. Workers who built the Transcontinental Railroad by hand in the 1860s had it hard. I like this comparison because it helps us put our perceptions back in order. Building a railroad is hard. Plugging in our headphones and closing our eyes for 20 minutes is easy. It just takes commitment, and that is something that our Tinder, Amazon Prime, instant gratification mind is not used to anymore. But anyone who has ever taken the time to handcraft a beautiful piece of furniture, or paint a masterpiece, or practice enough to become the best player on the team, or grow a baby for 9 months, will tell you that the best things in life take time and require an investment of your energy and commitment. You can do this, and you're worthy of the results. So rather than telling yourself it is quote-unquote hard, start affirming, I am worthy of this commitment. I can put the time in. I already am. That brings us to this chapter's self-hypnosis process, in which you'll have the opportunity to observe one area of your life where you've been blaming others and giving your power away. You'll have a chance to take responsibility and face reality. In doing so, you'll reinstate your power. Then, we'll conclude with an exercise that helps you become aware of one action step you can take today that will allow you to reclaim responsibility for the situation. A quick note before we move on. Do I always get this 100% right in my own life? Am I perfect and always floating around like